Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. I'm so delighted that you joined us today, and I want to get straight away to a very, very special guest. But first, let me just remind you that this program, Ancient Future Faith, is brought to you each week by the Ministry of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith church in Sacramento, California. I'm Chris Alford, the blessed guy who gets to be the pastor, and we love to bring you a wide variety of guests to talk about this thing called Ancient Future Faith, and I'm thrilled to say today, joining me from Louisiana, is author Rod Dreher. He's senior editor at the American Conservative. He's written and edited for the New York Post, Dallas Morning News, National Review, others. He's had his commentary published in the Wall Street Journal, a number of other outlets. He's appeared on NPR, ABC News, Fox News, CNN. And he's written several books. One of them particularly has impacted me. Rod Dreher, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Chris.
Rod, take just half a jiffy and tell folks a little bit about you, and then I'd love to talk a little bit about, well, you have another book coming out, but first I'd love to focus on this book that had such an impact on us, okay?
Sure. I am 53 years old, a little bit past the middle of the journey of my life, I think. I was born and raised in South Louisiana, not in a much of a church-going family, but the church that we only went to on Easter and Christmas was the Methodist Church, as God wants. That's how my dad saw things. Really, by the time I got to be a teenager, I drifted away from my faith, but had a radical turning around when I was 17 years old on a trip to Europe. My mother had won in a church drawing a trip to Europe, didn't want to go herself, so she sent me because she knew I cared about art and literature. Well, I was with this American group of older Americans. I was the only one under the age of 70 on this whole bus. We stopped on the way to Paris at an old church. And I didn't want to go see another old church, but I also didn't want to sit on the bus for an hour. So I followed the group into the church. This was the medieval cathedral of Chartres in northern France.
Yeah.
I was too young and too ill-educated to realize that this is considered one of the great architectural milestones of Western civilization.
Surely.
But Chris, when I walked in there, I was overwhelmed by beauty and by the awesome presence of God in the stone and the glass. There was nothing in my life growing up in late 20th century America that had prepared me for the glory of God made manifest in this ancient cathedral. And I knew standing there, beholding all this, that God existed and that he wanted me. Now, I didn't walk out of that cathedral as a Christian, but I walked out of there on a quest again, a quest that ultimately led me to a sincere and deep conversion in my 20s. I became a Roman Catholic and lived as a Catholic for 13 years and was very faithful as a Catholic. But I got involved writing about the church abuse scandal when I was at the New York Post as a columnist in the early 2000s. And I got so deep into that that it felt like I just lost my capacity to believe as a Catholic. I converted to Orthodoxy, Eastern Orthodoxy, not because I thought it was going to be free of sin. I don't think there's any church that is free of sin. But because of the things that I already believed as a Catholic, it seemed to me and to my wife that Orthodoxy was the only path for us. So we came into Orthodoxy, but I must say that I came in as a broken and chastened Christian because when I became a Catholic in my mid-20s, I brought into the faith a real intellectual arrogance that I knew all the answers. And God, in his severe mercy, allowed me to be broken of my worship of the institutional church. That's not the Catholic Church's fault. That was my fault.
Right.
And so I've tried to live these last 14 years as an Orthodox Christian in a much more humble way and focusing on more on prayer and living a simple life instead of getting involved in all the controversies and intellectualism that almost derailed me.
Wow. Your story reminds me a little bit of C.S. Lewis's journey. And also, I've been dying to ask you if you have read Ian Crone's book, Chasing Francis. Does that ring a bell?
No, I haven't read that. My wife gets on me all the time. She said, you've got to read more fiction.
Well, this is the book I wished I had written. In short, it's a fictional work about a pastor of a mega church who has a breakdown in the pulpit and goes to Europe, where his uncle is a Franciscan, and he learns about beauty and art and architecture. And it reminds me a little bit about your story.
You've just put something new on my reading list, because that was my quest. I had no idea, again, being raised in 20th century America, about the deep roots of the Christian faith. As far as I knew, we went from the early church to Billy Graham. And
right. Rod Dreher is my guest today on Ancient Future Faith. He's an author and writer, and one of his books in particular, which I mentioned earlier, has had a huge impact on me pastorally, also our leadership. And though it is 3 years old, it is still, in fact, some ways, I think, even more important for today. Folks, I cannot urge you strongly enough to pick up a copy of The Benedict Option, A Strategy for Christians in a Post-Christian Nation. Rod, have you had a resurgence of folks reading it?
You know, I actually have. My publisher is able to keep track of how many sales we have every week. And there has been not one week since the book was first published over 3 years ago when we haven't sold at least 100 copies.
Wow.
Because this is a tremendous word of mouth book. It's sold 75,000 copies in this country. It's been translated into 11 languages, sold really well in Europe. But it's a book that I wrote for evangelicals, for mainline Protestants, for Catholics, and for Orthodox. It's not a sectarian book, but it's a book in which I try to say that we all have to get back to a much more radically faithful, spiritually disciplined life if we are going to endure the trials that are upon us now and that are soon to come.
One of the things I tell my congregation often, and it was a little phrase that my mentor, Robert Weber, the late theologian, used to say, is the road to our evangelical future runs through our ancient Christian past. And you take a look at the life of Benedict and say, here's some things, church, that we ought to take a careful look at, especially in these days. Could you just give us a thumbnail of what the book attempts to do and what sort of your main thrust or two of the big messages?
Right. Well, I first got interested in Benedict of Nursia, who was born in the year 480, 4 years after the last Roman emperor of the West was deposed. But he was born into a world of collapse in the central part of Italy. He was born to a Christian family. His parents sent him down to Rome to finish his education. When he got to the city of Rome, he found chaos and barbarism and a lot of licentiousness. He just couldn't take it. He said, if I stay here and keep living this way, keep up with my studies, I'm going to end up losing my faith. Mm. So he withdrew. Benedict went to a cave in Subiaco, which is about 30 miles from central Rome. Mm-hmm. And he lived there in the cave for 3 years, just fasting, praying, and seeking the will of the Lord. When he came out, he started a monastic community and wrote what we now call the Rule of St. Benedict, which
yes.
is just a guide for living in Christian community. And when he died, he had founded 12 monasteries in the vicinity of Rome, and that would have been quite an accomplishment on its own. But what happened was people in the western part of the Roman Empire, they were living in such times of chaos and suffering that they needed something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And men and women flocked to the Benedictine order. They formed monasteries that spread throughout Western Europe. They would evangelize. But they would also civilize people in the sense that they would try to provide a still point of light and order and prayer for these people who are living through terrible times. And over the course of the next few centuries, they laid the groundwork for the rebirth of Christian civilization in Western Europe. Whether you're Catholic or not, we owe everything to the fact that those Benedictine monks were able to keep the light burning through the so-called Dark Ages.
Indeed.
And yeah, my argument in this book is that not that we should all become monks or nuns, because that's not going to happen for we who are called to live in the world, but rather I say that we ought to look to the Rule of St. Benedict and what these monks accomplished and figure out ways that we can adapt the wisdom of their way of life to our way of life as lay Christians in the 21st century while being faithful to our own confessions. I mean, the Benedict option for Catholics is not going to look the same as it is for evangelicals.
Right.
But I think that there is a core of wisdom there that all of us can profit from.
Indeed. You make a wonderful case for how we got to this particular place, which is, I want to say, one of the most brilliant parts of the book, as far as I'm concerned. You trace how we got into this particular crisis in chapter two. And folks, if you read nothing else, that particular progression really knocked me flat, Rod.
Yeah, because it made me realize, as I was studying this myself, Chris, about how so many things that we take for granted in the modern world, they were actually constructs that came to us from a set of assumptions made in the high Middle Ages that led to the next thing, then to the next thing, and finally to atheism and to the situation we have today. The core point here, though, is in the high Middle Ages, there was an intellectual shift that was sort of like, you know, the story of the butterfly that flaps his wings on one side of the world leads to a hurricane on the other side.
Right.
Well, that's what happens here. There was a philosophical battle between the monks and theologians of the church at that time. And what happened was the side that won was the side that said that there is no intrinsic meaning to anything in creation other than what we give to it.
Yes.
Now, that was such a slight little change because everybody believed that God created the world. But until that point, the church, they had always taught that the glory of God was manifest in nature as well as outside of nature. But nothing shifted slightly to where in the West, they began to think that nature itself had no intrinsic connection to God other than just it was created and then we're taught to love it because it's God's creation. That doesn't sound very controversial, but over the next centuries, as this idea kept growing, eventually God became exiled from the world. And we get to a point today where so many people don't believe in God, and those that do believe in God tend to think of him as a sort of a far removed king or a cosmic butler who only exists to give us what we want when we want it.
I think one of the principal things that your book does is to say we need to take a strategic retreat. It's not that we need to disengage completely and give up, throw our hands up and say all is lost. But Rod, you write, this is not just about our own survival. If we're going to be for the world as Christ meant for us to be, we're going to have to spend more time away from the world in deep prayer and substantial spiritual training. My guest today is Rod Dreher. He's a wonderful author. I'm just blessed to have him here on the program. And Rod, I understand that there is another book coming out, and I can't wait to get. You've been talking to some Christian dissidents around the world. How in the world did that begin to take place, and what has come out of those conversations?
Well, this book called Live Not by Lies, which is a title taken from the last essay that Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great Russian dissident, sent to his followers in Russia before the Soviets exiled him. The genesis of the book, Chris, started about 5 years ago. I got a call from a physician at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and we had a mutual friend. He said, listen, I don't know me, but I've got to tell you something that's really unnerved me. My elderly mother lives with my wife and me. She was born and raised in Czechoslovakia. And before she immigrated to America, she spent 6 years in a communist prison for her Christian faith. And now she's at the end of her life, and she says, son, the things I see happening in America today remind me of what I left behind.
Wow.
Yeah, it scared this doctor, and I said, wow, that seems pretty alarming to me. But I didn't know, Chris, whether to take it seriously or whether just to say, oh, yeah, an old lady who watches too much cable TV.
Right, right.
So I contacted some Christian friends of mine who live in the UK, who defected in the 1960s from Hungary, ran the story by them, and they said, oh, it's absolutely true. We're sitting here every day in our retirement, reading the newspapers, watching TV, thinking this is what we left behind. So what I did was try to understand where they were coming from and what is it about what's emerging in our liberal democracy today? What does it have in common with totalitarianism of the kind they left behind? And the first half of my book analyzes that and says, look, it might sound alarming to you, but this is what they're seeing, and this is why we Christians have to pay attention. The second half of the book is based on my travels throughout the former Soviet bloc and in Russia to interviewing Christians who suffered under hard totalitarianism of the Soviet kind, and to asking them, what do we have to learn? How should we Christians living in the West be preparing ourselves spiritually and otherwise for what's to come?
Wow, it's stunningly important, folks. Rod Dreher is my guest. He's talking about a book that's coming out very soon called Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. And for years, immigrants of the former Soviet bloc have been talking to Rod, and they're seeing telltale signs of what you're calling, Rod, soft totalitarianism, and what we should be on the lookout for, and more importantly, how should we Christians respond? Rod, how should we respond?
Well, the first thing we need to do is make ourselves aware of what's happening. I dedicate the book to a Croatian Catholic priest named Father Tomislav Kolakovic. Father Kolakovic was doing anti-Nazi underground work in Croatia in 1943 when the Gestapo started coming after him. So he escaped the country, went to Slovakia next door where his mother was from. He lived under an assumed name and began teaching his Catholic students that the good news is the Germans are going to lose this war. The bad news is this country is going to be ruled by the Soviets when it's over with. And they're going to come after the church. So we have to get ready. What he did was organize these prayer groups, prayer cells of young faithful Christians who would come together to pray and to study, but they would also learn the arts of resistance. For example, how to endure an interrogation without breaking.
Wow.
The bishops at the time thought he was an alarmist, but he kept plugging away at it. Sure enough, in 1948, when the Iron Curtain came down, the first thing the communists did was arrest all the pastors and shut the churches down. But the underground groups that Father Kolakovic founded, they became the backbone of the underground church and their resistance for 40 years.
Mercy.
So that's the first thing we need to do is make ourselves aware of what's going on in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we need to form strong, dedicated fellowships, small groups, because that's where we will find a lot of our courage and our spiritual strength is from other believers. I found this everywhere I went. Mm-hmm. When I was in Moscow talking to people who had come through in the 70s, who had come to Christ then, they said that the only thing they had beside their Bibles were each other. And most important of all, Chris, we have got to learn how to suffer. That is our great weakness.
Oh, indeed.
We have had it so easy for so long, and I'm accusing myself of this too. We don't know what it's like to be persecuted for our faith. And when I talk about soft totalitarianism, this is what I mean. I don't think that they will need to build gulags for us. I think that it will be enough for them to cut us off from our comfort, from our status in this middle-class society, to cause us to conform to anything. So if my readers get nothing else from my book, it is to learn how to suffer. Because over and over, the testimony of the people I talk to in the Eastern Bloc is, if you don't know how to really suffer for Christ, then you're not going to make it. You're going to collapse. You're going to conform.
I mentioned to our congregation recently that I don't think necessarily that the church is being systematically and purposefully persecuted at the moment, but the powers and principalities are watching very closely. And we're on something of a slippery slope, I think, as they watch and learn how to manipulate and how to get their claws on the church. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree with it. And the fact that they're not coming at us in a direct way in most cases is part of the wiliness and the success that those against the church are having. For example, in China, they have something called the social credit system.
Yes.
It's a totally electronic economy over there. And if you do something that gets yourself a negative social credit rating, like go to church or associate with people the government hates, your social credit rating will come down. You'll have fewer privileges. You won't be able to get a good job. You won't be able to travel. Your kids won't be able to go to college. We are going to have that here. I feel certain. You and I are talking here at the end of September. Just last week, I heard from a reader of mine who's in the tech industry who sent me documents showing that the tech industry is already planning for the eventuality of a social credit system here in the United States. This is something that can work very well with the structures we already have in place in America. And I try to talk about in my book how so many of us just don't know how much we are already surveilled by big business and by the government.
It reminds me a little bit of a story in the previous book we were talking about, The Benedict Option, where some folks in big business were talking to you about the soft and maybe not so soft ways that they are targeted in their own workplace for not towing the line in signing on to various manifestos. I think, wasn't there a lapel pin or something like that?
Yeah, and I'm hearing this over and over again. It's gotten even worse since I published the Benedict Option. In fact, these last 6 months, as COVID has come to America, the George Floyd protests, we've seen major companies, universities, other institutions get more and more severe about quote-unquote educating, or I would say indoctrinating, their employees about the new social justice philosophy. And that is going to exclude faithful Orthodox Christians. I say smaller Orthodox because I mean those who believe what the Bible teaches when it conflicts with this progressive ideology. Mm-hmm. We're going to suffer, and the social credit system coming into being is going to be able to find out where we go online, who we associate with, and register that, whether we want them to know it or not. I remember, Chris, I was sitting in Prague in the home of Kamila Bendova. The Benda family was a very faithful Christian family who resisted communism. I was sitting there interviewing her about what that was like, and I noticed she didn't have a smartphone. Well, she told me that she wouldn't have a smartphone, and then she pointed to the scars on the wall where she and her late husband had pulled out the wires after communism fell. The government was surveilling their family.
Wow.
And she said, she said, if you had been through what we had been through, you Americans, you would never hand over your information so easily to anybody. And this is not just me theorizing in sort of a late great planet Earth left behind way.
Right.
This is coming from an older Christian woman whose husband went to prison for 4 years for his dissident activity and who had the government bugging her house.
Rod has recently been talking to a lot of Christian dissidents in former Soviet bloc countries. Please get a copy of Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. Rod, is there such thing as Christian resistance?
Yes, there has to be, but the first act of resistance is becoming aware that there's something that needs resisting. And I call it soft totalitarianism because the hard version is what we're all aware of from reading George Orwell, 1984, and the Cold War, you know, with secret police, with gulags, things like that. The soft version is going to be much more like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Yes.
Where they manipulate us not by the infliction of pain and terror, but rather by manipulating our access to comfort and status and entertainment. Already we're seeing banks start to cut people off from commerce in areas that the banks don't approve of. Just this week, a friend of mine who's a priest said he went to buy ammo because he likes to go hunting. And the sporting goods store said that Wells Fargo cut them off entirely, would not do banking with them because they sell firearms.
Wow.
And look, Chris, it sounds alarming when I say these things. But again, when you talk to the people who've been through it, they all remind me, too, of what Solzhenitsyn said, that the great error that people in the West make is to assume that what happened in Russia could not happen here.
Indeed. The book is Live Not by Lies. Also, we've been talking about the Benedict Option, and the author is Rod Dreher. Rod, I know your schedule must be crazy, and I'm just so grateful for you taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, Chris, it was a pleasure being with you, and I would tell you and your listeners that all of us Christians, whatever our confession, we need each other in the worst way. One of the big lessons I learned, too, from this book is that when you are in prison for Jesus Christ, all these denominational differences melt away.
Oh,
because when the secret police come for you, they're coming for you because you confess Christ, not because you're a Catholic, an evangelical, or an Orthodox.
Yeah. Rod Dreher, bless you. Thank you. And folks, listen, before we gather for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this, would you? Surely, the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church. And they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113, or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi, folks. This is Pastor Chris. One more time before you tune out, I wanted to tell you that in these topsy-turvy times, we at Epiclesis are meeting together in one spot for worship on Sunday mornings. Of course, our Zoom and Facebook applications are still available for folks who can't make it. But depending upon the guidelines, we will either be outdoors or indoors. But we are meeting together, and we'd love to have you join us. So get all the information at epiclesis.org. And the Lord be with you.